My name is Dominique Sergio Imbalaji. I'm the owner and the managing director of Golden Insect. Golden Insect is a small insect center whereby different types of insects and other living organisms are bred. So at Golden Insect, actually, we are breeding mainly the black soldier flies, the Emetia elicens, that are used to produce maggots that are fed to animals such as pigs, chicken, and fish. We also breed red worms, the Asiania fetida that are used in the bioconversion of waste into quality compost, into the world's best in compost called vermicompost. We are also breeding the giant African land snails. There's the snails that are used as food for human consumption. They are protein rich and cholesterol free. We are also breeding things like edible cricket, and some algae called azolla that are fed to animals and social proteins. So that is Golden Insect. We do that for the purpose of enhancing sustainable food systems and promote climate smart technologies in Rwanda by using insects. For information, for me, I have a bachelor's degree in horticulture, and I got the inspiration of diving into breeding after graduation, after seeing that insect is an opportunity that many people are not exploiting, and that I had to look for a job. And I thought that by using my knowledge and skills from the university, as after in my dissertation was about the impact of vermicompost.
Please help me, Jesus.
So I tried to grab that opportunity of using my the result of my dissertation at the university and create my own opportunity by breeding these things of insects. And I'm also sure that I'm a pioneer and the first one here in Rwanda to commercially start breeding these things of insects and make a business out of it.
Mm.
Yeah, that is me. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a big one. And I think it's fair to say you've been busy, Xavier. And I really want to appreciate all, your visionary, your endeavor. I know also a number of people that you have trained, a number of farms that you've helped set up, over time and all of that. So, thank you. That's basically, also been inspirational to a lot of people, not just in Rwanda, but even across. Multiple countries in Africa. I know you guys do both what we call the edible and non-edible. Can you tell me a little bit more about edible insects and other non-organisms that you guys grow? Do you want to, can you mention some of them just in brief terms, some of the edible ones?
Yes. If we start mentioning edible, we have to mention, are they edible? To what, to who, to what, no? Some are edible, like people eat them. Others are also, there are also other animals that eat the stuff, the insects. So, like a cricket are edible, like human consume them, people consume them. But also it can be used as animal feed. Giant African land snails also are edible. People eat them, but also they are their shell is used as a source of calcium and magnesium in the animal feed formulation. Here, by considering the African giant plant nest, it is also better to mention to know the species that are edible, because not every species of a snail is edible. Some are contain like a toxic product, so that if, however much you can cook them or prepare them, they can intoxicate you. So it is better to know. Here, to go to intake to a breeding, what is what I called Acatina, in the Acatina Africa, and what is called the Acacatina marginata. So they are the three species that we are breeding here at the Golden Insect. The others that are not edible to human is the black soda flies that are only used for animal feed formulation, though there are some people who prefer also to take the product of the black soda flies, the maggots, they eat them, they make a kind of a cakes and yeah, those products. I once tried to eat maggot. I bred maggot and I ate them. They're so sweet. You can eat them, no problem. And the red worms are not also edible, but they are used in a vermicompost production, the bio-waste transformation into compost. Yeah, this is what I can say. But also there are some other insects that people can eat. There are caterpillars, people eat them. And there are so many insects that depending on the country and the culture that people are eating. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So I think the reason why I asked that first question is basically to expand our horizon in terms of how we think about edible insects. About insect farming generally, that there are some that could be used for, you know, whether it's a protein production, whether it's animal feed, and different things like that. But today, I want us to zoom in a little bit more intensively on black soja fly. The black soja fly, it's one particular insect that seems to have so much potential. My first question to you, Xavier, would be, why black soja fly cultivation? What are the reasons? Why do you think it's important? Why do you think this could be a game changer for a number of people? Why is it important? What kind of problem does it solve? Yeah.
Yes, thank you. For the black soja fly cultivation, like by considering the current situation of the COVID-19, many people have observed that there is a gap that need to be filled. First of all, during the COVID-19, there was nothing like things over import or export. So all the stuffs were blocked. So because many farmers in different countries use it to feed their animals, the soybean and fish meat. For example, yeah, in Rwanda use it to import more than 35 tons of soybeans from the neighboring countries. And because of Corona, now they blocked things and probably a few of the quantity came to the country. So this contributed to rising on the soybean price. And so, but also there is a competition. We human, we are also competing with the animals on soybean. And the cultivation of soybean, there is also a sort of lack of land in these days because we are like an urbanization. People are building houses. So we are getting out of land for soybean cultivation. So this means that there should be an alternative solution, that there should be a way of substituting the soybean or replacing the soybean. Because also the other thing that people use is the fish meat. And also now, nowadays, there is a claim that the fish in either in lakes or in oceans and seas, there is a shortage of fish there, because also we people, we need it to eat it. So we don't have any other chance of feeding the fish to animals while we don't even have what to eat. So the third point is about the waste. We are in a world like now whereby agriculture and the livestock is contributing a lot to the greenhouse gas emission. So that is one point that explains how much also agriculture is generating waste. So because there is a free disposal of waste, and that waste is contributing to the emission of greenhouse gases, there has to be a way of transforming or recycling that waste like an environmental friendly way. So by doing that, the black soldier fly cultivation contributes a lot to the transformation of that bio waste that is being produced at different levels in the agriculture sector. And by converting that to waste, we also produce proteins, because we are also having a lack of protein. So that is why black soldier fly cultivation is coming in as a solution to this like a point that I've highlighted. Yeah,
that's really, I love the way you make a social case for it. You made economic case for it, and you made environmental case for it. Specifically, you talk about the protein gap, how black soldier fly could actually be a very good solution to that. I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit more about that shortly as well. You also talk about nutrient cycling, and that's a big one. Also, the idea of reducing the climate impact of agriculture, whether in terms of land use. But I think the one that might interest most people is actually the fact that the livestock feed, it's getting expensive every day. And this could be an alternative solution. So really, thank you for talking more about that. From this perspective, for somebody who is just getting introduced to this idea of black soldier fly, I know a number of people here, some have experience, know one or two things. Some are hearing of black soldier fly for the first time. Can you walk us through a little bit about the life cycle of the black soldier fly? Tell us a little bit about this insect. You know, what makes this insect tick?
Yes. Thank you very much. First of all, for people who are meeting like the black soldier fly word for the first time in their ears, I'd like to tell them that a black soldier fly is just a fly. That is, it is black. Yeah? It is black, but it is specifically known by its ability of not like feeding on any waste. So the fly never eats. Only the fly drinks. So that is the difference between a black soldier fly and the other house flies. This black soldier fly just has like different stages. Has the stage like a It is just a fly, so it lays eggs, and then the eggs hatches into small larvae that they are called like instars. So then after that, the larva, the small larva, they grow by changing. Like I think this is called the metamorphosis, I think. So it changes shapes day by day, as it changes shapes. But the life cycle of this black soldier fly, on average, it takes 45 days on average. So because the fly can live from 5 to 10 days, fly can live like that. Then the flies mate. The flies, they are mating, but the female are the only ones that are laying eggs. One female can lay around, let's say 500 eggs, and just in three days. Because for me, like at Gode Insect, you're harvesting eggs every 3 days, because when the fly lays eggs, they package them on something called a cardboard in the form of clusters. So every 3 days you can harvest, because one egg is too tiny to be seen by naked eye, but a fly comes and lays eggs over another egg, so you can just see there is many eggs, and then you can be able to harvest them. Then after the eggs have been hatched, they undergo different like stages. They go the larva, then after larva, they are pre-pupate, then after they are pupate. So at the larva stage, that's the time when the maggot is ready. Actually, after 15 to 20 days after hatching, the maggot is ready. They are still white. They are still white and they are still decomposing. They are still feeding on waste. So, but after some days, like 25 days, 30 days, they start becoming a little bit brown, dark brown, things like that. So they are pre-pupate. And then after a number of days, they become black but still moving. At that level, they don't even need food. That is what is called auto-harvesting or self-harvesting. They no longer need the food, they migrate. Once you put like food there, well, they don't eat, they go out. So here when I mentioned food is any waste, any type of waste, you know, chicken waste, farm waste, animal manures, like cow manure, pig manure, any manures you might know, you can feed them to this maggot. Because here we are talking about the transformation of waste into protein. So, and we are also talking about like a cheap way of producing animal feed. So if you can, you'll be feeding your maggot, with anything that you can buy at a high cost. So that will not be any way of reducing your cost of animal feed because you also be buying. Of course, there might be some of the cost attributed to probably transporting the waste from town. Like me, I'm located in 12 miles from Musanze town, from my town. So there is a cost of transport, but I'm not buying waste. If you buy waste, that means you won't go cheaper. It will be also be expensive, though you'll be producing quality animal feed. So that is in general, the life cycle of the black soldier flies. It is just a kind of like a 45 days, but changing into different shapes. Thank you.
We still have a lot of ground to cover, so I wanted to move a little bit faster into maybe some of the questions that we've received so far. Let's just go straight to the point. We want to start farming. I know the first thing people need to invest on is knowledge. In any agribusiness, you investing in knowledge is always the first thing you really want to do, and also starting small and all of that. Let me give a caveat. At the end of this webinar, you are not going to be an expert in black soldier fly production. Just need more knowledge. The goal of this webinar is basically to introduce you to really know what kind of questions should you be asking and all of that. But for somebody who wants to start, what kind of materials do you think is needed for black soldier fly cultivation? What are the basic materials? What are the kind of, how expensive it is to get this kind of project started? Can you, tell us one or two different materials and things that are really needed for a black soldier fly farm?
Yes, of course. Thank you. The first thing that is needed in the BSF farming is like I can call it a machine or a tool that can help the farmer to chop waste into small pieces, you know, because the maggots, they don't have teeth. So if we give it like a full banana or a full potato or a full cassava, of course it will decompose it, but it will take a time. So it is better first to start by taking your waste and then you shred them into small pieces, you know, reduce the volume. So this is a shredding machine that is at the market. You can find it. You can order it from Amazon or Alibaba. You can buy it, but also you can probably if because this is somehow expensive. It can be somehow expensive, but in different communities there are some locally made machines that used to chop waste into small pieces. For instance, here in Rwanda, There is a small machine that is used to chop cassava leaves into small pieces. Here we are in Rwanda, we use it to eat cassava leaves so much. So that kind of machine can also work to chop these waste into small pieces. So after you have this machine, it is important to have this machine or to find any way of chopping waste into small pieces. You can any way you can do that, but make sure that you're doing this because this helps your maggots to feed on your waste quickly and decompose them and easily. Then with that, them losing energy while transforming your waste. So secondly, after this machine, you are just going to need feeding trays or boxes. This is one of the type of the boxes, but this is the commercial one, the professional one. Because these ones, they are so strong enough, you can put one over another, and then you can probably have 10 things of these boxes that you full of maggots and waste. I mentioned these boxes because you can even take the jerrycans we're using home. The jerrycans also can be used. Even the basins, those ones we are using when we are bad thing, you know. So this is the things you can use or any item you can use. Yeah, but these are the professional ones because they take a small space and you can use them for a long period of time without always. Keep thinking of buying things because when you use soft things, soft boxes, and you are putting their waste, sometimes they change shapes or you cannot put one over another, so it won't last. It won't be sustainable things. So thirdly, after just you having a shredding machine, you have boxes. And then after, we need to have a material called larvae cage. You know, larvae cage, that's just larvae cage. You know, that's where the flies are living. That's where, because flies are mating. They're mating there. So you have to make sure that you're having the cage. So the cage have a specific net. That net is not the mosquito net. Once you use the mosquito net, I think some people here, when they see the picture here, they think that is the mosquito net. It is not. A mosquito net has some products in it that are used to prevent to repel flies, to repel the mosquitoes. So once you put flies inside there, the BSF flies they die. So you have to take into consideration the size, you know, of your cage, because the bigger the cage, once the cage is big, flies, they fly long distances, you know, because they fly just inside, they're flying. But when the cage is large or big enough, and then the flies are flying long distances within the cage, they use a lot of energy flying, so they lose that energy. When they're laying eggs, they don't have that kind of they're not able to lay many eggs because they have flew a lot within the cage, so you have to be sure that you are just cage is just small somehow, so that the fly can migrate from one side to another easily. Yes, things like that. So the smaller the better. Yeah. So after this, you will need something eggies or cardboard. You can use the locally available products. See, you can use cartons on this picture, or you just can use these things, a wooden one. So with this, the first picture here, with the cartons, it is not sustainable because when you are harvesting the eggs, you have to break the cartons every day. So, and now we are in a world of thinking of how to sustainably using items. So for me, I do prefer to use these wooden ones. So I have to put one wooden eggy over another, but in the middle and in between, there has to be like a small space, you know, a small space, because you see when a fly is laying eggs, it bends, then like I put the eggs inside there. These are the best way of like having these things, your flies lay eggs, because these flies, they are good at checking the if there is a place where to lay eggs. Otherwise, they lay eggs anywhere. You know, they lay eggs anywhere in the cage. You know, you can find they lay eggs everywhere because you have not put the eggs where they have to lay eggs. So the other item you will need is rooms. So for the BSF, it is better, no, that fly, the fly itself lays eggs when there is like a high intensity of light, you know. So you have to make sure that you have a room where you're going to put your cages. It has to have a kind of transparent roof. And in the absence of that, you can use what is called artificial light. Artificial light can appropriately be used where the love cage are located. But the artificial light, of course, you know, they're somehow expensive. Right? Not everyone can afford that. But because, these things of relying on environmental conditions only, sometimes it rains for 2-3 weeks without like enough intensity of light. So at that time, you know, flies are not laying eggs because they don't have that is why I have to have this kind of transparent room, probably that you can maximize the light penetration. But also we're going to need a dark room. You know, these are for the flies. It's okay with the light, but for the maggots, for the larvae, it's not okay with the light. So when the maggots are decomposing waste, they need darkness. That's why you should be also having a dark room, whereby you'll be putting your boxes, you know, the feeding room where the boxes, because inside the boxes, that's where the maggots are located with food waste. Hmm. Yes.
Yeah. There's a number of follow-up questions that I've been reading from the chat box as you are going into details of it. So I want to take one of them. One of them was more about the dimension of the box. You know, you share with us this box. It seemed most of them couldn't see the... Is this the standard dimension? The dimension here is 145 centimeters. At the base, the height is 175 centimeter, and then 75 centimeter at the top.
Yes, but here you can just use for like you see here at my picture, this one for my cages. These are cages. These are not boxes. This cage, but my cage is 1 meter length, 1 meter width, and a 175 the height. So if you can't exceed that kind of measurement, you can still be in the range, you know, in the yes.
Yeah.
For the boxes, a box should not like exceed 60 centimeters of the box, the green one, you know. Should not like see the length, it should not exceed 60 centimeters, and the width should not exceed 40 centimeters, and the height should not exceed 20 centimeters. Yeah, things like that. Because if the height is is more than 20 centimeters, and you're going to put what's in there, you know, there is a kind of a compacting, and sometimes the maggot die. So you have to make sure that you're putting waste in there, but also not too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes.
So I want us to move a little bit forward, a little bit.
Yes.
Now you've given us an overall view of what we need. We need a shredder, right?
Yes.
We need the room we're going to be using for here, the box, and all these major things that you've talked about earlier on. One of the questions that was asked yesterday was some sort of, for somebody who just want to start with, what kind of budget would that look like? But I know that that's a relative thing, right? Because, you know, some people could get a shredder for $10, while another person might be able to pay $200, $500 for the same thing. But that might be something maybe if you are able to talk to later on, feel free to talk about it. But I want to start. Where do I start from? You know, from your own perspective, from your own experience, what are the starting materials for a BSF colony?
So for me, I'd advise people, when you want to start the BSF colony, if you are new, you know, if you are new in these things, to the first of all, as we've mentioned, that I know there is people have first to invest in knowledge to know, to put hands on skills and how really practically to do the BSF cultivation. That's the first thing. So after you have like a full package of information of what to do and how it is done practically, theoretically, and even practically. So first, you can choose where to start by yourself, because you have learned in the theory, you have learned lots of things. But here you can start with eggs. It's okay. You can take some grams of eggs and then you go and you start the hatching process, things like that. Because though here I did not mention a lot all the processes, because we have like a short period of time and to be like a lot of stuff here. But you can take the eggs, then you start with eggs. But the problem with eggs is that you know, there is a high mortality rate is high with the eggs, you know. And sometimes people, they even lose 100% of their eggs. For me, at Golden Insect, we are now at the rate of 90% of the hatching rate of our eggs. But I don't know, because because I've been doing these things for around for the last like 5 years. So I know these stuff. But when you're a beginner, the hatchability will be as low as 20%, I know. So the other thing you can start with is the pupae. So the pupae, these ones, you know, you see these ones that are ready to give flies. So you can start with the pupae once you have your cages. So, and then you have flies, then fly lay eggs, then immediately you come back to eggs, then you start incubating your eggs. Or you can start with the 5-day-old larvae. These ones that they're eating on food waste. They are, you know, they're active. These ones, they're active now. These ones that decomposing a lot of waste, you know, per day. So you can either choose to start with the eggs or with the pupae or with the 5-day-old eggs. But for me, for a beginner, I would start with any of these three. But as a beginner, the information I can give to beginners is that at the beginning, of course, you lose some of these things, these stuffs, because they need like a specific environmental conditions. They need a specific handling, you know, things like that, that at the beginning you don't know practically. Probably you've read it on Google, or you've followed some videos on YouTube, or like any workshops like this. But in the beginning, when you're a beginner, you lose a lot of your stuffs. But as this go by. You just learn by doing. Yeah, thank you.
That's good. So, but the summary of what Savio is saying is, dream big, but start small, because you can guarantee you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to lose some of your starting seed and all of that. But with experience also comes efficiency. With that also comes learn more. I think was talking about having, how many is it, 90 something percent now hatchability from some of your of the eggs. I want you to talk a little bit more about the efficiency of the BSF larva, especially when it comes to decomposing food waste. How efficient are really her in that decomposition process? From what you've seen, from the data that you've gathered, from, you know, tell us a little bit more. How efficient they are?
Yeah, you know, the thing that is here is just like you know, you go everywhere around the world, people are just saying, you know, have the issue of waste. But I think probably these guys, they don't know how easily how to transform this waste into compost. These maggots, these larvae, they are really good at decomposing things. Imagine 1 gram of eggs actually gives around 4 to 5 kg. They eat 4 to 5 kgs of waste per day. But this is because 1 gram of eggs for a professional, when you have like around 90% of the hatchability, 1 gram of eggs can give you around 4 kgs of maggot. So the 4 kgs of maggot, they are able to eat 4 to 5 kgs of waste per day. This means what? This means for if you think you are going to dive into the things of BSF cultivation, my friend, make sure that you have a constant source of waste, because these maggots, they won't really give you any chance to think without giving them waste. They are good at decomposing. They are good at decomposing in a way you can't really understand. So I've just seen there's someone who is asking where I can get the BSF eggs. For information, me, I'm exporting the eggs, the BSF eggs. So if you can have like an import certificate from your country, me, I have an export license here in Rwanda. So I can send eggs to you wherever you might be. Yes, I'm selling these things. I think I'll be coming back to this year at the end of the presentation or if the questions come by. So the other things like these maggots, they're eating on food waste, and they're decomposing them in a kind of like a flour. It is called frass. So this is used for agricultural purposes as organic fertilizer. So for the first point, if you can just see, if you have 1 gram of eggs, I'm able to decompose 4 kgs, 4 kgs of waste per day with 1 gram of eggs. And here at Golden Insect, when it is not heavily raining, we can even produce more than 100 grams of eggs per week. So this means 1 gram is eating 4 kgs of waste per day. Then 100 grams we are producing today is sometime we are giving them more than 3 tons of waste per week. So you see the maggots can are efficiently decomposing food waste than anything, any living organisms that is living here. You know, they are decomposing a lot of heavy waste. And the good news is that when they are decomposing the food waste, the environment, the room, the dark room where they are just located, like when they are eating, it is odorless, no poor smell, no bad smell. So this is because the maggots are able to sequestrate and stabilize the gases that are coming from waste. And with this, you are now a climate smart way, you know. And so that I think, and the other thing is like for the BSF, you can feed them like any type of food waste without toxic products. So like if you can't take waste and you mix with the salt, you know, at that time you kill your maggots. You kind of take your waste and you put there like acidic things, you know, you will kill a maggot. And the other thing is like the maggot, they don't eat they only eat the biodegradable waste. So I had an experience one day I was training someone, then she asked me if she can put there even the sanitary pad from the women to decompose, because I said no, that can't work. So you only give them like the bio waste and nothing else.
Yeah. Some people are asking, do you think things like poultry waste can be also used, either poultry waste or animal waste?
Yes. Okay. So here for the first point, you can just see I've mentioned in a circular way. That means first, for example, I think here we have like a pig farmers, poultry farmers. Those ones, they are generating waste. And you know, those guys, they have their waste are like a poor smell. You know, pig pig manure and the chicken manure, you know, these stuff, they have like a poor smell. So to decompose them, you have like just have, if you have a lot of these stuffs, you better breed, you better dive into BSF cultivation, because with your waste, you can feed the maggots, and then the maggots, they eat them with that, like emitting these gases from your waste, and the maggots you feed it to your pig or your chicken. So in a circular way. Yes. You don't even need to go to run for other byways to feed. You are now like a waste free, no?
Yeah. Circular economy, which comes back to that, right? You've talked about feeding into different kind of animals. One of the questions I saw somebody asking on the platform earlier was, how efficient is actually the feed? The person was asking things like, will my chicken actually gain weight by eating this, by feeding them this maggot? And can you tell us a little bit about your experience in terms of feeding the maggots to animals?
Yes. So you see, as you can just see on these pictures, I think I've missed one when I was feeding the maggot to pigs. I've missed that one here. But I do. So these animals, they eat the maggot. They eat the maggot. As I told you, the best stage to feed your animals is when they are 15 to 20 days. At that time, they're market ready. And their protein content is still high at that level, at that stage. If exceed that stage, the maggot starts consuming their own protein. So that's why you have to make sure that you are taking them at that stage and then you feed it to your animals. So the experience I have is like, excuse me, let's take an example of those people who are breeding the broilers, they, you know, there's chicken, they don't have good meat when you're cooking them. But when you feed the maggot to your broilers, the experience here we have is just in 45 days, actually, a well-fed broiler has 2.5 kgs. But the meat, you know, the meat quality is just like, you know, I don't know how I call it, but, you know, you all know the meat we are eating in hotels and things like that. But when you feed your maggot to your chicken, in 39 days, your chicken has around 3.5 kgs. That means there is a difference in weight, you know. When you feed them traditionally or by using the other feed at the market, in 45 days, you have 2.5 kgs. But by feeding them with maggot as a source of protein, in 39 days, you have 3.5 kgs. When you come to meat, the meat of the broiler that has eaten maggot has tested as the local chicken, you know, the chicken that we're having in the village. And the other thing, when you go to egg, you know, egg, they have there is a very deep yellow yolk inside to the a chicken with maggot as also protein. And also the shell of the egg is somehow, how can I call it? Somehow strong, you know, you can't break it easily as just by compared to the other eggs from the chicken with the feed from the market. So this is this is my experience. But also, you know, nowadays there are people who are like having dogs in their houses. You can feed them with the maggots, social proteins, you know, they grow healthier than going to the market to buy the dish sheets for dogs and things like that. And for fish, it's still the same, you know. For fish also, you can see this picture. I was like at the fish pond. I was feeding the fish with the maggot. You know, they like it so much and they grow well. I think this is because of the content of the maggot, you know, the protein in the maggot. Yeah,
that's amazing. So one of the things I wanted to talk about before we start moving towards questions and answers, it's also, you've also talked about drying them, that it's not just about you having to feel them immediately, you have to use them immediately, there's a way you can actually preserve them as well. Can you talk a little bit about drying maggots and packaging them?
Yes. Maggots can be dried. You know, you can dry them under the sun or can dry them artificially in an oven or in any other dry condition. But the problem with it, like it's only drying them is like it takes a long period of time, like 2-3 weeks. And you know, 2-3 weeks is something, it takes a long 2-3 weeks. You know, there is a time where there's very bad smell, you know, it smells very bad. And so with that, probably you are putting it under the sun, it is about to rain, you have to take it out in the house. It is stressing, you know. And with that, you will be able to produce low quality of the maggot meal. You know, the maggot meal is the dried maggot. But putting them in ovens is the best way and the shortest one. But it is also, you know, every technology, everything has just to challenge the opportunity. Here you have to dry your maggot for 6 hours at 70 degrees, you know. That means you're consuming power, you know, you're consuming energy. I don't know, in different countries, you have different prices for power for electricity, but, you know, this stuff is somehow expensive, you know. But with this ovening, it produces good quality of the meal and the maggot meal. Just you can see here, for me, I do package it, you know, just you can see this is my bag. I do package 10 kgs, 25, 50 kgs, depending on the customer's need, the customer's preference. I do package it, and I do try. I'm nowadays thinking of how to use the biodegradable bags to package these stuffs. And with these things, I take it to the market and I send it to farmers. Yeah, these are the things that I can say just about the drying and the packaging. But in the packaging, you have to make sure that after you package your things, you don't put your package on the ground, on the floor, because you know there is the things that it causes aflatoxin for these things like a flower. Mm. You know, so when there is humidity, you know, when you put it down on the concrete, there is a kind of a humidity. The humidity gets higher, and there is the aflatoxin attacks your maggot meal. And once you feed your maggot meal with the aflatoxin to your pigs or to your chicken, there are some problems that those problems also will affect the consumers after, you know.
Yeah.
So that is why after packaging, you have to make sure that you have to put your bags in an aerated environment where there won't be too much humidity in that room.
Farod is asking a question about even that preservation. You mentioned earlier on that, you know, the protein content of the maggot is highest around that 15 days. Let's say you try to maybe preserve them at that stage. How does that affect the protein? Does that does that alter the protein content in any way if I try to oven dry it at that 15 days thing? You know, have you is this something you've looked into? If the protein content gets altered due to preservation?
Yes, of course. Even like in the oven, overheating them also, you know, destroys, you know, the chemistry of proteins, the bonds, things like that. So if you overheat them, the bonds, they get broken of the protein, or they change the protein structure. So it is better to respect some of the guidelines so that you can have like a good quality of your maggot meal. Yeah,
I see. So the summary is that there's always the technical things to really learn about each of these steps that is very important to put into consideration. People have been asking. Thank you for sharing. I was just about to say that as well. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about mentorship and training and some of the things we have in plan later on. But I want Xavio to talk about some of the challenges. I know you've talked the fact that, you know, the BSF maggots could actually replace soybean in animal feed and how that could really be a good thing. But I want to talk about some of the challenges that you see in black soja flies cultivation. What are some specific challenges that you think are very important for people to be aware of when it's come to cultivating black soja fly?
So the things like, I think let me start with this question. Someone is asking, why though, can't we feed the fresh maggot to our animals? You can feed your maggot. If you are producing your maggot, you can just feed it immediately to your animals, you know, when they are fresh. It's fine. You know, that is even the best way of feeding your animals. Even we human, when you go to the market and you see fresh vegetables, now you want to feel that it's okay. But the problem is that when you have like 100 chicken and you are putting there, let's take 5 kgs of fresh maggot, you know, you don't know some of the, one chick can even eat like 2 kgs of maggot alone. So you can't know if all the chicken have like eaten probably even one piece of the maggot. So that is one thing. Secondly, it's like you need to store your feed for some period of time, you know, because, you know, even when the proteins are too much in your feed, your animals also have problems of digestibility, you know, things of digesting your feed, because even for us, we human, when you eat like too much of the protein, you get, you know, then it's not good. So that is why you have to dry them, and you make sure that you can formulate your feed. You can formulate your feed, you know, by like knowing the exact quantity of things to mix, because these maggots are source of protein, but also you need a source of energy like maize or sorghum or millet or something like that, or broilers, like brewers, you know, these stuff, the waste from the beer makers industry, things like that. And so, but by coming back to this point, it is like maggots are really a good source of replacing soybean or fish meal, the animal feed formulation. First of all, when you're producing maggots, you can produce maggots on site. You know, where you are, you can produce your own maggots. It's okay. That is one thing, you know. But it is not for everyone here for us to producing soybean, to produce soybean home. It's not easy for us. You need like a much land. Secondly, you know, the proteins in the maggot are higher. For me, from my experiment, it's just like my maggot contained like around 70% of proteins, while the soybean I was comparing it to had around 36%. So the maggots are like in double in terms of proteins, you know, than the soybean. That means when you are going to feed your animals, where you will be in need of like 10 kgs of soybean, you will be in need of 2-3 kgs of the maggot, you know. So you are reducing the cost, but you produce the quality. And the other thing is the price of soybean, like now here in Rwanda, 1 kg of soybean, it's around $1, you know, and 1 kg of the maggot is around $0.3 to $0.5. So that means the price of the soybean is double than the price of the BSF. So for a farmer, what we are doing is like to start like her thinking of a cheap way of supplying animal feed. But so we just look at a way of supplying animal feed, but at low cost. So that means black soja fly will be a good way of replacing soybean. Thirdly, that we are not competing. We human competing with the animals on blacks on maggot. Now the maggots are only for the animals, but for soybean there is a competition between we humans and the animals. For fish meat, the same. So that is also a way of doing things. So challenges in the BSF cultivation. The first thing, if you're going to go into the black soja flies, you have to know that the best things are called ectothermic. You know, They are sensitive to environmental, like a temperature. Their metabolism, their body, like a reaction within their body depends on the temperature and the light of the environment. So this means you have to make sure, as I mentioned, you know, the fly, I don't know if there is anyone here who have seen a fly when it is raining. No, you can't see a fly because it's too cold. And when there is no light, you can't see a fly. So this means if you go to start this stuff, you have to take into consideration the issue of environment, you know. And for me, like now it is raining, so I'm producing a lot of eggs, and I'm losing flies. Some because it's been raining for 2-3 weeks, some flies have died, you know. Yeah, that is the scenario. Unless I have like the artificial light, you know, controlled environment, I can manage the situation. And the other thing, the other challenge in these things is the quantitative unavailability of protein-rich food waste. You know, to have the protein content within the maggot depends on the food waste that the maggot have eaten. So if you give them, for instance, you give them like a cow manure or you know, if you give them, yes, what I've observed, if you give them cow manure only, you won't produce like a quality maggot. The protein level inside that will be low. But if you give them other food waste like fruit waste, vegetables, poultry waste, pig waste, and you mix them and just at different ratio, things like that, you produce a good maggot. And the other things like a cultural perspective about feeding maggots to animals, you know. If you start by doing this, you know, and you tell like pig farmers, farmer, please, I do have like a good product. And you show them they see the maggot, they tell you that they can't feed the things from toilet to their animals. That is a challenge because it's a culture. So this, it blocks you from going to the market, you know. And the other thing is like lack of starting material in some locations. For your information, the black sugar flies, they, in some places you can't find them, you know. That's how it is. In the other places, their population is even low. So the thing is like you have to look for like a supplier if you are not sure of to attract them in your environment. Yeah, that's it. So it's also a challenge. That's how I've seen so many people are looking for the supplier. Me, I can supply. There is no problem. Yeah.
So, and I wanted to talk about opportunities as well. But before then, I want to take a minute to talk about, I know we need to release Xavier shortly. Or maybe, Xavier, can you take 1 minute to talk about these opportunities? I know you've mentioned most of them, whether it's the job creation component, the circular agriculture. Is there any major thing you really want to touch on the opportunities in the black soldier flies cultivation?
Yes, because I've seen many people here that are just youth. So the thing to know is it's like insects are the future source of food because they have what we can't find in the other items you are eating. For instance, they have what is called essential amino acids. There's essential amino acids that are things you can't find either in cereals or in vegetables. No, you can't find them there. And the other opportunity is just like now there are insect centers that are coming. This shows how even the community, even the researchers are really aware of bringing insects in things that we need. You know, these insect centers, they are working on their multiplication, they are feeding their work, you know, things like that. And the other things like we're having nowadays, we are in an era of cultural diversification. Sometimes in some countries, we can't even remember they are really normal culture because we are in cultural diversification. So this is an opportunity for us, you know, when the community says we can't feed maggots to our animals, and there is a cultural diversification. Yeah, in one way or another, they feed them to the animals. So that is a market for us. Now, the other opportunity is just like, as I've mentioned, we have the whole world has run out of soybean, has run out of fish meat. So, and now, if you want to feed that, there's a product to your animals, you pay you know, at a high price. This means everyone is looking for a cheaper way, you know, cheaper way, but quality way of producing the other sources of proteins than soybean.
Yeah.
And then there is things of emerging circular agriculture. In this circular agriculture, people are just trying to get rid of of waste, you know. So we want to transform our waste, because waste has become a waste, and it's just a waste. So we needed to make sure that we can valorize that kind of waste in a circular way, so that waste can no longer be a waste, but be a god. Mm. And the other thing in opportunities for us in these things of black soldier fly or insect agriculture is that, you know, every year, you know, we have many graduates from the universities. Many people have been graduated, but there are no more positions, you know. So the way forward is to start creating our own jobs. Eh? You know, we are the vulnerable ones are youth, we youth and women. I think men, the bigger men, they're not vulnerable. But for us, in these things of insect agriculture, that's where we can find another way of surviving, because it will be like resolving the problem that the community is facing of it. And the last point is like, these things of insect breeding, these things of black soldier flies, you know, they need a low starting capital compared to macro livestock. You know, for example, to buy a cow, you need like more than $200 or from $200, you know, above. But to start a BSF, start a small colony, it can't even take more than like $50. So this means with your small money.
Oh, no. Can you unmute yourself, Xavier? We lost you a little bit.
Yes, I did it. I was saying that, you know, we need like a low capital to start these things of insect.
Yeah.
What we only need is the passion, you know, and then make sure that you are in things. The otherwise, drive. if you think you are young and you are a graduate and you think your community will see you carrying waste, and they will be like, my friend, you can't go in insect breeding. You have to to take your pride, like a pride off, and then go deep into insect. There is no problem, you know. People will laugh at you, but with your passion and perseverance, one day, you know, insect will help you earn a life.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Xavier, this is really good. There's a number of questions. I want to make two, three announcements just to that might address some of the questions that I've seen back up here. I know there are more questions here that we have not been able to address today. Continue submitting them. I'm going to work with Xavier, whereby we're going to be taking two of those questions every day and record it through voice note and share on the WhatsApp group. If you are not in the WhatsApp group, send me your WhatsApp number. I just send an email right now. Send an email to that so that we can add you to the group. So over the next 7 days, we're going to be answering some of these specific questions every day. Record it and send and share it across, and there could be discussion around it as well. The other thing I want to talk about, we're going to be working with Xavier as well later in the future, whereby there will be, he might even be able to come to Nigeria for some things. But we are launching a new, like a special organic farming masterclass. Some of you already are aware about it. Some are just hearing about it for the first time. The goal of this very particular special organic farming masterclass is for people that want to start a farm or people that are looking for how to make their farm more profitable. That's just the focus. So there are two things, major things we are going through. We're going to take you through the process of setting up a new farm. So we are going to be practically setting up a farm. Some that want to be come to that farm physically, we have opportunities to come there and actually be part of it. Some that are online, you'll be able to watch the whole process. That's the first component. And one of the things that will be set up in this farm is a BSF production. So you'll be able to watch through the whole process. There will be vermicomposting, there will be compost. And all the critical things that are essential in setting up a farm, whether it's the irrigation systems, whether it's all of those things, you'll be able to be part of it. But the second component of it also is the farm planning as well. That's the second thing that will be achieved through this Organic Farming Masterclass, whereby you'll be able to develop your soil fertility plan, your pest management plan, and all the critical things you need to consider to have a profitable farm. So if you are interested and want to be part of that, send an email to the email I just sent across, admin@agribusinessmasterclass.com, and just say I'm interested. More information will be shared with you on that. So those are two major announcements. The last announcement, it's next week. We're going to be having another webinar like this, but that focuses more now on disease and pest management for livestock. How do you do it organically? We're going to be bringing Biopelo. She's an experienced person and very fun to listen to as well, from Botswana. She's been sharing her experience on it over time. So to Ebenezer Ajayi's question, it's a paid masterclass. So as a matter of fact, actually only limited people are going to be admitted to it. But send him, let me, if you are interested, more information about the masterclass also will be shared with you. So, Xavier, do you still have like a concluding thought? Because I really want to respect your time, and I think we are exceeding it already. We can definitely continue the conversation on the WhatsApp. Yeah.
Yes, I just really would like to thank just you for having invited me to come and talk to the whole group, to the whole class. It's just amazing, and for initiative of starting these things of avoiding your farms there, it is also a good initiative. And for those people who really need these stuff, breeding stock, you are starting materials to start your insect farm and things like that. As I mentioned, I'm there. I can export it to you if you have like an import license from your country. I'm there. You know, I gave you my contacts and my emails. I'm an international consultant in these things of insect. I can travel to any countries when there are people who want me to go and train them. There is no problem. Things like that. I'm really glad, and I think this is not the last time I'm talking to you. If you need me again, I will come. I will be there. There is no problem. Thank you very much for your kind attention, and thank you for giving me your time and allowing me doing this for you.
Thank you so much, Zavi. Well, it's not a question of like if we are going to need you, but we're going to be bringing you back because there are so many topics here that we're just scratching the surface, that we're going to go more deeper into the specifics of what it takes to really set up an insect farm. So you and I, we'll talk more about how to address some of those specifics and how to really help as many people as possible that are interested in this topic. I'm going to send you a recording as well. Go ahead, Xavier.
And the other thing I would like to add is just like I'm just like in the intensive breeding, I'm also a farmer. I do the organic farming of for horticulture crops and things like that. I'm in regenerative and circular agriculture and the things of agroecology. I do practice that. I do that for just as a business, not for just only doing that. So that is my life. My life is just in that those things. That's why I get money from that. That is what I do. So I think I have many things to share with your group. And I'll be there. Yeah, there's no problem. If you need me again, I'll be coming back. Yeah. Thanks. And the other things, like, I would not like I really want to leave you, but because of time and there are some other appointments, I just love to thank you and just leave you a little bit and go for other appointments.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate having you sharing from the depth of your knowledge and experience. We appreciate everything you've done. And like I said, definitely we are bringing you back. We'll work out the details. There's so much that we would love to learn from you, either through the free webinar that we have on regularly, but I also know for sure, on the Organic Farming Masterclass as well. So to everybody here, please, if you are not in the WhatsApp group, send me an email. If you want to be part of the special Organic Farming Masterclass that we are starting, send me an email. If you want the recording of this as well, send me an email as well. We will make the recording available so that people that are unable to be here or maybe back and forth due to the network can still benefit from it. Once again, I really, really, really want to appreciate everyone for being here. You guys have been amazing. Another thing as well that I want to stretch a little bit is submit more questions. So this is not the end of this of the webinar. The more questions you are able to submit here, even in the chat box, we'll be able to take those questions in the WhatsApp group that we created specifically for this event. So the conversation, we can take them there, just making sure that we follow the decorum there and make it a very engaging platform for everyone. Once again, I really want to thank you all for being here and hope to see you next week when we bring Boipelo for Livestock Pest and Disease Management. Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye.